Let's get it on right now.
Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the Rockcast. And as you just heard, I am your host, Monty Colvin.
Who even wants to listen to this guy?
So glad you could join me. And I'm going to start out today on this show with some great news.
Well, I mean, can you imagine what that would be?
Well, as most of you know, I have been doing this podcast since 2008. Which, by my calculations, if I'm correct, is right around 7 years.
What a genius!
Well, during that time, I have had literally thousands of people walk up to me and say, "Hey, Monty, I would love to have a Monty's Rockcast t-shirt."
That's simply untrue.
No, seriously, they walk up to me on the street and say, "Monty, I beg of you, please make up some Rockcast t-shirts."
That's another lie.
So don't ask me why it took so long, because if you know me at all, you know I always put aside my own wants and desires to make it good for the people.
Yeah, sure.
I like to give you guys what you want, and out of the goodness of my heart, that's exactly what I've done. Because you can go at this very moment to my website, MontyColvin.net, and order your very own Rockcast t-shirt.
Woo-hoo-hoo! Yeah!
And I know that sounds incredibly amazing in itself, but you can also have your choice between two different designs.
That is amazing.
That's right. I not only made one t-shirt, I made two. So you can pick which one you like or buy both.
I don't even have words to describe how incredible this is.
And another thing, in the past, on some of my crunchy shirts and a lot of the Galactic Cowboy shirts, the biggest size I had was extra large. And I know some of you guys, and I'm not saying anything or criticizing, but you're a little bit bigger. And for you guys, I have double XLs.
How could anybody not be just absolutely bouncing off the walls with how incredible this is?
So I know you must be freaking out right now, and believe me, I understand how you feel. But when you can compose yourself, go to my website and order today. You can use PayPal, but if you're in Europe or the UK or anywhere like that, please add shipping, okay? Because it costs about $10 to send a t-shirt overseas. But it'll be worth it, because after you're wearing this thing, you're going to be considered the coolest looking guy in your neighborhood.
Kick-ass.
So there you go. That's my announcement. By popular demand, Rockcast t-shirts are available at MontyColvin.net.
It's just such a blessing. Thank you, God.
So show your support for the best podcast in the history of mankind. Why is it the best? Because while all of you were in high school going out on dates and having a good time, I was sitting at home alone in my room recording little shows like this on a tape recorder.
Yeah, it's so sad.
And little did I know that one day there would be a thing called a podcast that people could actually hear what I was saying. So thanks to my nerdiness and lack of friends and female companionship, today I have spawned the best free program on the internet.
And any who seek it will have it.
You're welcome.
Here's the first segment of the program.
All right, time to read some of your emails. I'll answer some of your questions, and I'll try to get to some of your top tens. And let's start out with a question from longtime listener and friend Jeff Moore. And Jeff says, "Hey man, did you hear about the meltdown that Five Finger Death Punch had in Memphis this past weekend?" Well, yeah, Jeff, I saw something posted on Facebook, and I didn't know if it was true or not. And I heard that they had actually broken up on stage. And if that's the case, I know a lot of people are going to be really upset, including Jimmy Jeff.
Yep.
I know that's one of his favorite bands. And if there's no more Five Finger Death Punch, well, let me just say, I will be so happy.
Say what?
Oh, my God, and sweet baby Jesus, please let that be true. If I never have to hear that they are headlining a gigantic festival here in Kansas City ever again, that will be so awesome. They made some of the most horrible douche rock CDs of all time, and I will not miss them one bit. But I figure with my luck, Five Finger Death Punch will work everything out, and they'll get back together and continue to rock and torment me for all time.
That's crazy!
I also got several questions on Facebook. One was from Jimmy G, who said, "Hey, Monty, does Jimmy Jeff have a cat?"
Huh?
Well, that's an excellent question, Jimmy. And, you know, I've never been out to Jimmy Jeff's place. And so I'm not sure about the cat, but I know he's mentioned a couple of times about having a hunting dog. He likes to go duck hunting, and he's got a bass boat and a pickup truck with a gun rack in it.
I heard that.
So I know he's got a dog, but I'm not sure about the cat.
Doggy.
I also heard from Fabrice in France, and the mighty Fab said that he loves that CJ Wildheart CD. And he also wanted to know where he could see that interview with Bruce Jenner. Yeah, you know, I watched that so you didn't have to, Fabrice, but if you really want to, it is on YouTube. And, you know, Lindsay didn't understand why I wanted to watch that in the first place. And I was just like, well, it's interesting. I don't know. I just kind of want to find out what the deal is. But she still didn't get it because she just finds the Kardashians completely worthless and disgusting. And I was like, nah, I just don't pay much attention to it. It's a dumb show that I've only seen a few minutes of, and it just doesn't really affect me. And I should have just left it at that, but then the topic of are the Kardashian women attractive came up. And I made the huge mistake of saying, well, yeah, I think they're attractive.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I mean, you would have thought that I just said, Lindsay, Pantera sucks. Because she was like, how can you say that? They are horrible, shallow people. And I was like, yeah, but that doesn't mean they're ugly. And we just kept going around and around, and the only way I could end the conversation was by admitting that Kim Kardashian has a giant deformed ass.
It's absolutely huge.
But as far as Bruce Jenner, as Johnny Carson would say, that is weird, wild stuff.
You are correct, sir. Yeah.
I also got a question from Sean McClure, and he said, hey, Monty, I'm watching Airheads right now. Were you in that movie in like the first 10 minutes? I saw the back of the bass player's head for like 1 second. Was that you? Well, yes, Sean. I don't mean to brag, but yes, that was me.
This is very embarrassing.
And I've told this story before, but while we were shooting that movie, I was doing all kinds of cool stuff on stage, spinning around and jumping. But for some reason, at one point, I turned and walked back to my amp, which I don't know why I did that, because it wasn't plugged in. And for some reason, when they edited the movie, they looked at that 2 seconds of footage and went, yep, that's the one right there. And, you know, I don't know why that was, because I feel like, I'm a pretty visual person on stage, got a lot of stage presence, worked my ass off when I'm on there. But when Galactic Cowboys was doing videos, we'd go out and do like a 2 or 3 day shoot. And I'd just be exhausted by the end of it from moving around so much. And the director would send us the first cut, and we'd look at it, and I'd go, where am I? And I literally wouldn't even be in the video. And I remember after we shot the If I Were a Killer video, and when we saw the first version of it, the director had turned it into an anti-gun video. And Ben was really upset about that, so he called our manager at the time and said, listen, it's not about anti-gun, and could you put a little bit more of the bass player in there?
Why?
And so Airheads was not the only time that I got dissed, but then again, I think it may just be a bass player thing. Because the other night I was watching this live concert of Alter Bridge, and you saw Tremonti, the guitar player, you saw Miles Kennedy, and you even saw the drummer once in a while. But the bass player was nowhere to be found. And so I thought a lot about it, and I came to the conclusion that people are just prejudiced against bass players.
It's an outrage.
Yeah, and I think something needs to be done about it.
I know it's the truth!
Anyway, the next email is from my buddy Greg Skipton. And he says, I've been listening to some metalcore lately. Bands like Sonic Syndicate, Threat Signal, and The Unguided. I was always into more traditional metal, like Machine Head, Crowbar, Pantera, etc. But I guess I'm growing to like metalcore as well. Anyway, my question is, was there any type of music that you didn't like very much when you first heard it, but later it started to grow on you?
Tell me the answer to that.
Oh yeah, Greg, that's happened to me a lot, but you know something else that's happened? I've actually heard stuff that I liked initially, but then ended up hating. So, yeah, I'm kind of weird like that, but there's a lot of stuff when I first heard it I didn't like. For instance, I hated disco back in the 70s, but if I hear a KC and the Sunshine Band song come on today on the radio, I'll go, you know, it's kind of got a nice groove, pretty catchy hook.
Are you nuts?
But I know what you're asking me, and the better answer is probably thrash. When I first heard Metallica, I was like, man, this is just too intense. And I was playing in a Christian band at the time, and everybody in the band was just making fun of that stuff. And I remember the day I went and bought Peace Sells by Megadeth, and I got it on cassette, and I was kind of hiding it from all of them because I was a little bit embarrassed. But I kept listening to it, and after a while, I'm like, this is the greatest stuff I've ever heard. And so I know what you're saying, Greg, because I was kind of that way with the metalcore stuff myself. It was real heavy with a lot of screaming vocals and all that, but, you know, I kept going, but I love these melodies. And then I started discovering bands like Killswitch and Under Oath, and just became a huge fan. And while I don't like every band in the genre, there's a lot of great ones. So, good question, Greg. And you mentioned The Unguided earlier. Well, I went to YouTube and checked them out. I had never heard of them before, but they're kind of cool. So, let's give them a listen right now. This band reminds me of a Treyu, if a Treyu had a keyboard player. And they also remind me of a Christian band called Haste the Day. And I don't even know if Haste the Day is still together, but back years ago, they were so Christian that they actually kicked out their guitar player because he decided he was an atheist. And so, you know, word of the wise, if you're going to be in Haste the Day, you better believe what they do or they're kicking you to the curb. But anyway, back to The Unguided. I have no idea what they believe in, but their music sounds pretty good nonetheless.
Oh,
Is this not blowing your mind?
So that was the unguided, and thanks for turning me on to that, Greg Skipton.
Is your head not exploding right now?
Now, another email, this one from Eric in Orange County, who says, "Hey, Monty, I just read an old interview with Ben Huggins back in 1999 when you were touring the At the End of the Day CD. He mentioned that the band was going to take some time off so you could welcome the birth of your daughter. He also said that during the downtime, the band was planning on putting together a best of or anthology, including unreleased songs with permission from Geffen to use the songs from the first two albums. My question is there any chance it could still happen on Metal Blade? I know Brian Slagle is a big fan, and you already had most of your albums on his label." Well, yeah, Eric, I had actually kind of forgotten about that. And I'm not real good at math, but let me see. My daughter's about to turn 16 this summer, so we must have been talking about that roughly 16 years ago.
Genius!
I don't remember what happened on that. I know we were talking about it, and somehow it all fell through. But would Metal Blade be interested in doing that now? I kind of doubt it. Everything has changed so much in the industry since then. And honestly, if they were interested in working with us right now, we'd probably record a new album. But it always seems to be a matter of money and that no one wants to spend any on music anymore. So I don't know what to tell you. But as far as those unreleased songs go, it's probably best that they stay unreleased. We never put those on an album to begin with for a reason. But like everything I say, it's just my opinion. And you know what opinions are like.
Everybody got one and they all stink.
Okay, I got a similar question about my crunchy stuff from Mr. David Whiteman.
The new face of evil.
And David said, "What do you think the chances are of there being another crunchy album someday?" Well, thanks for asking, David. I know you're a hardcore supporter of my solo project called Crunchy, and you always have been. But at this point, I'd have to say there's only about a 50% chance I'll ever do another one. You see, the deal is, it's just hard to justify working for like 3 or 4 years on something when music has so little value these days, especially when you've got a family to support. And it was different back in the 80s and 90s because people actually bought albums. And these days, I think the only reason why you do an album is so you could go on tour and sell shirts and merchandise. And even that's expensive and very economically difficult to do. I mean, I'd love to do a crunchy tour, but without any kind of support, I don't think I could do it right now. It's like, do you guys out there even go to shows anymore? I know I do because I'm kind of a weirdo and I go see these young screamo bands and still have a good time. But I look on Facebook and I see Doug Penix on tour right now and I see the pictures and it doesn't look like anybody's at the shows. It's no slam on Doug, but it's just the fact that probably most of his fans are getting up there around 40 or 50 years old, and they don't go to shows anymore.
Very pointed and provocative commentary.
So myself, over the past few years, I've turned my attention to other things like, you know, I got my artwork, been writing on that book. Which, by the way, an update on that, I did the rough draft, and then I went all the way through it again and added a bunch of stuff. And now I'm going through it for a third time, and each time I write on it, it gets a little better. But I'm still working on it, and it will get finished eventually. But as far as music, yeah, I still write occasionally. In fact, the other day I was working on a new song about my cat, Mr. Kitty. And I thought, you know, maybe some of the people on the Rockcast would like to hear the rough demo.
I don't want that.
Well, all right then. Here you go. A song about my cat.
We don't want this!
This song is called Mr. Kitty's Licking Himself. Mr. Kitty's licking himself. Mr. Kitty's licking himself. Why does he do it? Because he can. Mr. Kitty's licking himself. All right.
Mr. Kitty's licking himself. Mr. Kitty's licking himself. Why does he do it? Because he can. Mr. Kitty's licking himself. Mr. Kitty's licking himself. Mr. Kitty's licking himself. Why does he do it? Because he can. Mr. Kitty's licking himself. Why does he do it? Because he can. Mr. Kitty's licking himself.
Time now to see what's on my iPod with another visit to Uncle Monty's Listening Corner. You know, my iPod can hold 160 gigs, and I've actually gotten so much stuff on there, it's maxed out, and every time I synchronize it, I have to delete a bunch of stuff, because I'm always getting new albums and checking out new music. And once in a while, some of it's great, but most of the time, it's not. And I'm going to start out today with something that's not great, or at least it was disappointing to me. They're a band called Fireflight, and I've actually liked them for a long time. They put out quite a few albums over the years. They got a couple of hot chicks in the band, and I like female singers. And I discovered them back in 2006, and they were pretty rockin', and it sounded like this. Yeah, kind of a meaty guitar sound, catchy hooks. And so over the years, whenever they put out a CD, I always try and check it out. So the other day when I saw they had a new CD out called Innova, well, I checked it out. Only to find out they'd kind of completely changed their sound. It seems they've traded in the rock and guitars for keyboards, and now they sound more like Kesha. I've got the So here's the deal. I don't mind if a band experiments and wants to change their sound. That's up to them. I don't even mind Kesha, you know. I can dig some techno pop once in a while.
What?
But in the case of Fireflight, I don't know. This just seems a little contrived. However, they are a Christian band, so if you're into harmless, unoffensive music, this might be your thing.
I love that!
They definitely have a talent for writing songs where you can't tell whether they're talking about God or their boyfriend, which makes it a lot easier for a Christian label to sell. Here's something that's kind of interesting. It's a new album by Apocalyptica. I'm sure that you've probably heard of them by now. They've been around for a while, and they are hard rock cello players. And they do some crazy stuff with those things. They've got some nice instrumentals on this album. But they also have a singer, and I'd love to say the songs are amazing, but I don't know, they're okay. Nothing that really blew me away this time, but they do have a couple of nice ballads on this thing. Next is a new CD from Todd Rundgren. It's called Global. I used to be a huge Todd Rundgren fan back in the 70s and 80s. And if it were still the 70s or 80s, I would probably take the time to listen to this over and over until I liked it. But since it's mostly electronic music and it's 2015, this will probably be the last time I hear it. Lyrically, this album is kind of a downer. Stuff about saving the planet and black people being forced to ride in the back of buses. But it did make me miss the days of Todd's old band Utopia, and I wish they would get back together. I would probably like that. This album, though, not so much.
This is just a bummer.
Have you ever asked yourself, I wonder what it would sound like if the band Whitesnake put out an album of Deep Purple cover tunes?
Never.
Well, I know I ask myself that every single day. So you can imagine how surprised I was when Whitesnake put out the Purple album. And I immediately got the answer to my question, and it was, yeah, it sounds exactly like I thought it would. Like a lot of these cover albums, it's not bad. It's just Whitesnake playing cover tunes.
So why do it?
However, I'm a big Ritchie Blackmore fan, and I would much rather hear him play guitar than Reb Beach. But I will say this, for a long time, I thought that David Coverdale was just a huge douche. But I heard an interview with him the other day on the Adam Carolla show. And he didn't come off douchey at all. In fact, he seemed like a nice guy. And for what it's worth, he sang pretty well on this album, too.
Who cares at this point?
You know, these days when I hear the name Pretenders, I automatically think of Chrissy Hynde and a bunch of songs I've heard on the radio way too much. Stuff like Back on the Chain Gang or I'll Stand By You or whatever. But when I was in college, I had their first album, and for the most part, it rocked.
We'll be right back.
about not in the book. About childhoods. Big town, pissing child, full thick knives. Young, lively, then lights hurt.
Yeah, see what I mean? The Pretenders used to be cool until half the band died. Literally. And here's somebody else who died who was amazing. It's Rory Gallagher. Every time I hear this guy play guitar, it just takes me to somewhere good. And I found this album on the internet the other day. It's called Irishman in New York. It's some old live stuff, and it doesn't sound incredible, but you'll get the idea. Rory Gallagher wrote great stuff, and he ripped. So there you go, another visit to Uncle Monty's Listening Corner. Sometimes it can be a scary place where you feel like you're being punished. But hopefully by the end you've learned something. I guess just kind of consider it a musical timeout that you'll thank me for later. We'll be right back. So that's some stuff that was on my iPod. And speaking of such things, I got a question from Jamie Corey. And he was wondering where you could find my crunchy stuff on the internet in digital form, like MP3. And I told him, well, the reason you haven't found anything like that is I don't believe there's anything like that out there yet. As far as I know, the only place to get my CDs is from my website in the actual physical CD form. You just order them and you get the actual CD mailed to you.
Do you have to make it so complicated?
But you know, I got to thinking the other day, I'm going to offer my listeners this option. If you're just one of those people who doesn't want the actual CD with the case and the artwork, well, here's what you do. First of all, get yourself a Dropbox account. It's Dropbox. Look it up. It's a free service. And then if you're willing to go to my website and make a little donation, you can then email me, tell me what you want, and I will hook you up. And that way you can just take the MP3s and throw them in your iTunes or iPod or whatever, and we're all happy.
We do not have the capacity to do this.
All right, moving on. You know, I don't think I did one single top 10 list on the last show. So I'm going to make up for it today by reading at least a couple, starting out with my good friend Paul Morgan. And Paul is almost always in the playoffs, not just because he sends me good lists, but because he sends me several. And I've always got good ones to pick from, and this time it's no exception. And the one I'm going to read today is Paul's top 10 best produced albums, in his humble opinion. And it starts out at number 10 with Frampton Comes Alive. And yeah, now that you mention it, Paul, that did sound good. I mean, for a live album? And I'm not ashamed to say that that album was a big reason why I became a musician. Everything from Frampton's guitar solos to the album cover made me just want to go buy a guitar, and so I did. But here's another album that changed my life. It's number 9, Master of Puppets. A great sounding album from early Metallica, and Paul says, raw but polished, one of the best metal albums of all time. Very true. But here's a surprise, at number 8, it's Dirty Weapons by Killer Dwarves. Alright, I've never really listened to them that much, but here's something we've all heard a million times. At number 7, it's 1984 by Van Halen.
Yeah!
Okay, I actually prefer the first two Van Halen albums to anything they ever did. And coincidentally, at number 6, Paul has Van Halen, the first album. Yeah, that album was like nothing I'd ever heard before. The guitar sound, and it's all coming out of one side.
Oh, yes!
And they were singing about running with the devil, and it just scared me.
Oh!
Number 5 is Aldo Nova by Aldo Nova. And that's a great choice, Paul. And I don't even remember what the production was like on it. I just remember I loved it. Because I was in college at the time, and Doug Pennick, who was a friend of mine even back then, had made me a cassette tape of that. And I had one of the first Walkmans ever made in my backpack, and I'd walk around campus jamming out, and I thought that was so cool. I'm walking in stereo. And yeah, one of those albums that I would listen to all the time was Aldo Nova.
Like a knife.
Yeah, Aldo Nova, a Canadian guitar player, singer, and apparently he produced that himself.
Very exciting information.
Next on Paul's list of his favorite best produced albums is number 4, Live and Dangerous by Thin Lizzy. And produced is probably a good way to describe this album, because from what I understand, most of it was overdubbed. But I'm guessing I'm like most people who heard this album back in the 70s and 80s. We don't care one bit. It sounded like a live concert. It felt like a live concert with all the energy. And I played the crap out of this album. I would jam along to it every night with my guitar until I learned all the solos. And the songs were great and I loved it, and good choice, Paul. But that would bring us to number 3, and Paul says all 3 of these top 3 all have Alan Parsons and Abbey Road Studios in common. And with that in mind, Paul has a tie at number 3 with Eye in the Sky by Alan Parsons Project, and The Year of the Cat by Al Stewart.
Who is that?
Oh, come on. You guys remember Al Stewart, don't you?
No, it's not ringing a bell.
If you've ever listened to classic radio, you've surely heard the song, The Year of the Cat.
What the hell was that?
I mean, Al sounded a little bit funny, but it was a good song nonetheless.
How inappropriate.
Anyway, number 2 was Abbey Road by the Beatles, and number 1 is Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. Well, way to go, Paul. That was indeed a good list of well-produced albums. Thanks for sending that in, but I think I'll do another one right now, and the next one comes from Steve Ellison. And as you remember, Steve was one of the finalists in the Battle of the Bands, but he is back now with a list of top 10 legendary bands that still have all the original members. In other words, Boston or Foreigner, who only have one original guy left in the band, will probably not be on this list. And I get it, these guys want to keep touring and keep making a living playing music. But I kind of have a rule myself: if the lead singer and the guitar player who wrote all the songs are no longer in the band, you are not that band. If you've just got a bunch of hired guns playing those songs, at that point, you are just a tribute band. So let's see who Steve has on his list of bands that still have all the original members, or at least the lineup that made them famous, and they're still active in 2015.
I'm completely confused.
And he starts it out at number 10 with Stryper.
Good Lord.
At number 9, Steve has Soundgarden. And, well, actually, the original bass player was this Asian-looking guy, but I get what you mean.
Absolutely.
Number 8 is Rush. And here's another one of my rules. If you've been in a band for over 40 years and you weren't the original member, well, consider yourself one now. So, yeah, we'll consider Neil Peart an original member of Rush.
I don't know a damn thing about him!
At number 7, Steve has NoFX. And I told Steve I've never really listened to NoFX that much, but the fact that he's got a punk band on here is awesome. So I will try and check out some NoFX, but next I've got to move on to number 6, which is Motley Crue. Yep, all original members, and they're doing their farewell tour.
Thank God.
And I can't really blame them. I mean, do you still want to be playing Dr. Feelgood when you're 70? Take the money and go on vacation.
Why not?
Next up at number 5 is Green Day, and number 4 is Rammstein.
Brutal!
Okay, here's the deal with me and Rammstein. Since they sing in German, I don't know anything that they're saying. But I've watched a couple of their shows on YouTube, and they put on the greatest live show ever. Better than Kiss, better than anyone. And of all the bands on my bucket list, they are it. I have to see Rammstein before I kick it.
Okay.
Number 3 on Steve's list is ZZ Top. And the deal with ZZ Top is that, yes, they look like old men up there. But the cool thing is, they look like old men 35 years ago. So nobody cares. It's ZZ Top and they rule.
You bet they do.
And finally, at number two is Aerosmith. And at number one on Steve's list is U2.
I'm sorry, come again?
Hard to believe those guys are still around and still playing.
So?
But like it or not, they are kind of legendary.
Go on.
I mean, you've got Bono and The Edge and Adam and Larry. Yeah, I'm not really sure what happened there to the rhythm section. You would have thought that Bono and The Edge would have said, listen, get a cool nickname, guys, or you're out. But apparently they were like, nope, don't need a nickname. In fact, you're never even going to hear us talk.
Awesome.
But regardless, good list, Steve. You and Paul Morgan are now both eligible for an amazing prize package. I'm going to wrap things up with a brand new segment called What the Hell?
What the Hell?
That's right, What the Hell? It's completely different from anything else I've ever done, like I'm Just Saying or Get Off My Lawn or any of the other numerous segments where I just complain. And why is it different? Well, I'll tell you, because this time I'm really agitated. And it all started about a week ago when I'm watching this basketball game. And the Cleveland Cavaliers have the ball, and LeBron James goes up for this jump shot and hits it at the buzzer. Well, that in itself would piss me off because I hate LeBron James. But after the game, I find out that Cleveland's coach had called a play that didn't have LeBron taking the last shot. But LeBron James just told his teammates, forget that, scratch it, get the ball to me and get out of my way.
What a douche.
And then the next day on ESPN, I hear the media praising LeBron James for doing this. I mean, after all, he's the best player on the planet. Therefore, there's no reason why he should listen to his coach. And then I thought about my 8-year-old who's playing basketball. And I thought, oh my God, what kind of message is this sending to the youth that's coming up? With egotistical tools like LeBron James to look up to, we are in trouble. I mean, what the hell? Our sons have role models like that. And as for our daughters, we've got soulless cretins like Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber to admire. And all I can do is seriously cringe at the thought of these kids taking over the world someday.
Get off my lawn!
Well, actually, it's what the hell.
What the hell?
Yeah, there you go. All right, you know what else irritates me? The post office. The other day, I go in there to mail a guy a t-shirt who lives in Germany. And I filled out all the forms that you have to do for it. And I wait in line, and I finally get up there. And the gal behind the desk starts asking me all the questions, like, is there anything flammable, perishable, blah, blah, blah. And of course, I say no. Of course, a t-shirt is actually flammable, but for our purposes, I just say no. But then for the next 5 or 10 minutes, she's standing there typing in all this info, and I'm waiting and waiting. And she finally looks at me and says, that'll be $14.80. And naturally, I said to myself, what the hell? What has happened to the price of postage? I mean, don't get me wrong, 49 cents is still a pretty good deal to mail a letter. But for everything else, the postage is apparently worth more than whatever is in the package that you're trying to send. So if you live in Europe, keep that in mind when you order one of my t-shirts, which I'm sure you're going to do.
I'm just saying!
But that's going to do it for this episode. I'm going to take you out with a new song from a band who has a very stupid name. They're called Chunk, no, Captain Chunk.
I call that stupid.
Regardless, their music is pretty good. They got some nice harmonies, and they remind me a little bit of 4 Year Strong, kind of a punk pop thing. So if you're into that kind of thing, check it out. If not, well, I'll be back soon. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me, and...
rock on.
And what else?
And buy a t-shirt.
Yeah, there you go.
attention. I'm standing right the fuck here.
Wake up, wake up, can you hear me?
Where's all the passion? Has it disappeared?
Get up, or I'm leaving.
I won't waste any more of this life. Losing direction, missing connections. One last time, I'm screaming out loud. What's inside my head? I'm sick of you. Missing connections for one last time. I'm screaming out loud. What's inside my head? I won't waste any more of this life. Losing direction. Missing connections.
The end.